All right, this will be the Chazar Shir for Rev Ben Arsh's Shir Masechta Sukkah for Shir number 4, 5, and 6. The goal will be to do each one of these Shirim in about 15 minutes, so we'll try to speed through it and save everything else for afterwards. So, Shir number 4. Beginning with the Gemara in the bottom of Chaf Heyam and Aleph to Chaf Heyam and Beis Masechta Sukkah. So, the question has to be asked, why did the Gemara need to try to find somebody special to be asking the question about Pesach Sheni of Lamani Gara? Why should they lose out on missing the mitzvah Pesach Sheni to be asking that question to Moshe Rabbeinu? The Gemara can't just assume that it's somebody who just died and therefore people were tame from them. Why does the Gemara have to figure out who these people were? So there's two different answers that Rebbe mentioned in Shir. Number one would be that of the Ra and the Ritva. And that since these people were asking such a lumdish question, you know, the way that they were trying to figure it out, as we'll see soon, was something that was very deep and clearly displayed halachic knowledge. So they must have been great people. And therefore, they were probably people like Mishael and El Tzafan, or they were the people in charge of Yosef's bones. So people that we know who would have been very, very great, and thus would have asked this type of question, and these were the people who were telling me. And that's why the Gemara was seeking somebody out like that. The Tzlach, however, has a different opinion. He says that since we know that nobody died during that year, he's basing this off the fact that the census amount was the same in that same span of time. And since that's true, we needed to find somebody special who would have been involved with a mace, since nobody died of natural causes. It was either Mishael and Tzafan by Nadav and Avihu, or it was those that were already carrying Yosef, who had been long dead, so that they were carrying his bones, and they were therefore tame. It was something like that, and that's why the Gemara was seeking somebody else, since nobody had died normally during that year. Okay, so now, though, let's just go on in the Gemara. Rabbi Yitzchak really seems to make a lot of sense, right? Rabbi Yitzchak claims that based off of the calculations, if we're talking about Tzafan and Mishael off of Nadav and Avihu's death, or if we're talking about the people in charge of Yosef's bones, and this was then on Rosh Chodesh Nisan when they came to ask Moshe the question, because that would have been when Tzafan and Mishael had become Tamei, then why didn't they go ahead and become Tahar? They hadn't more than enough time. They easily could have. So if that's true, what would Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef Galili respond back to Rabbi Yitzchak? So a few different answers are given to this. The Ibn Ezra, actually, on Chumash, says that according to the Pshat reading of the Torah, the Yom HaShemini, which we refer to when Nadav and Avihu died, was not actually on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, as Chazal actually interpreted. But instead, Yom HaShemini means literally the eighth day, and that's the eighth day of Nisan, not the eighth day of the Miluim, which would have been again of Adar, which would have been on the first day of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, but rather, it's from Rosh Chodesh Nisan through the eighth day of Nisan, and that's when they died. Accordingly, that's how Rabbi Akiva understood, since he was talking about Tzafan and Mishael. So, since that's true, we now understand why they didn't have time to become Tahar, because on the eighth day was when they became Tameh, and then 7 days later would have already been the 15th, and they wouldn't have had a chance to become Tahar before the bringing of the Korban Pesach. So that's the Ibn Ezra's interpretation. However, that really only works according to Rabbi Akiva, who held it was Mishael and Tzafan, not according to Rabbi Yosef Galili, who held it was the people who carried Yosef's bones, because still, nonetheless, you know, they were Tameh all along, still from beforehand, and they could have just made themselves Tahar with enough time that they could have brought the Pesach Sheni. So instead, we have a few different answers that can also cover for Rabbi Yosef Galili. So Rabbi mentioned the Ritva, who said that they were waiting. They didn't bother to become Tahor because they thought that it was fine to be Tameh on the 14th, on Yudalid, as long as they would end up becoming Tahor on the 15th, which the halacha isn't actually true. That's not sufficient. But it now makes sense as to why they wouldn't rush to become Tahor, because they didn't think it was a problem that they were Tameh, and they basically dilly-dallied until the point when it was already too late, although they didn't realize it would be too late. So, in short, the Ritva's point is that the reason why Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef Galili would say that these people didn't become Tahor even though they had the opportunity was because they thought they still had the chance, even though it turned out that they were mistaken. Then we have another approach, another way to solve this problem about like what Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef Galili would say, is based off Rashi and Gittin. And Rashi says that, no, really, indeed, they did have enough time. They asked on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and according to Rabbi Yosef Galili, they asked right then on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and they had more than enough time. But the reason why they didn't become Tahor then is not to say that they cut in half, or maybe they themselves even had. They were only asking before they knew about Parah Aduma, but then once they knew, then they would have gone ahead and made themselves tahar. But it was just for this concept in general of Pesach Sheni, and that was why Moshe then taught Bnei Yisrael about Pesach Sheni. So if you go like this Rashi and Gittin, it ends up not being a proof for Osek B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah then, right? Since they themselves actually were able to come tahar. So we can't learn anything from their story. Oh, how come they went and they made themselves tame in a way which they would not be able to become tahor prior to bringing the Korban Pesach? Because, in fact, they did make themselves tahor, and they were able to bring the Korban Pesach that year. It was just a conceptual problem, and like for the future, this was something that was relevant. But that isn't a question that now it's no longer about Osek B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah, since, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, there still is a proof. Rabbi Yitzchak still says that they asked on the eighth day, at which point their becoming tame for the Meis Mitzvah was sufficient reason for them to avoid having to bring the Korban Pesach upcoming, and thus is still a proof for Osek B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah. So it's not really a problem that according to Rabbi Yosi and Haglili and Rabbi Akiva, we don't learn Osek B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah, according to this Rashi and Gittin, but we would still learn it from Rabbi Yitzchak, and the Gemara still had a good proof from him. Okay, so that's a third perspective, and finally a fourth one would be the Tzlach. He said that the reason why these people, according to Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosi Haglili, didn't become Tahor was because they didn't know that there would be a Korban Pesach that year. It was only once they found out that it was a Korban Pesach that they came, you know, banging down Moshe's door and said, oh, no, we want to become Tamei too. Why should we lose out? And that's when he told them about Pesach Sheni. But the reason why they didn't rush to become Tahor was because they didn't realize there was going to be a Korban Pesach that year. They thought it was only going that it was a special din in Pesach Mitzrayim, not in years that would be subsequent to that one. So that's how the Tzlach uses this idea to explain what Rabbi Yosi Haglili and Rabbi Akiva would hold to explain why these people didn't become Tamar. Okay, so now Rashi and Tosos say that this Gemara isn't really talking, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, doesn't really mean a Meis Mitzvah per se, but rather it was just the Mitzvah being mitame to one's relatives. So now, just a question that Rabbi just addressed is that still, if nobody was going to be mitame to this person, then that would make this person be a Meis Mitzvah then, if nobody would have buried them. So, in essence, it really was a Meis Mitzvah, not just the Mitzvah of being mitame to relatives. If everybody else would have been avoiding becoming tame, so that way they wouldn't bring, that way they wouldn't be prevented from being the Korban Pesach. So just the answer that Rabbi mentioned, they're like, no, you could say that they still would have been able to get somebody who wasn't chayav in the Korban Pesach, like let's say a katan, or a mitzora, or like let's say women, if we hold that women are putter from Korban Pesach. So somebody else could have gone ahead and been mitame to them and taken care of it, so it wouldn't have been like a true Meis Mitzvah. And that's why Rashi and Tosfos are basically saying they know it's that since there would have been some other way to do it, it doesn't really mean specifically a Meis Mitzvah, but it's even just the mitzvah of being mitame to one's relatives. Okay, so then next Rami mentioned that there's a famous tshuva of the Radvaz that said that it's better to let somebody, if somebody has a choice, somebody's in jail, and they have an option of being let out for one day, so which day should they wait for? Should they wait for like Yom Kippur or something special? So he says, no, it's better to be let out as soon as you can. You know, for that one day, tomorrow, the first possible day, instead of waiting for some other day, because of the rule of Ein Ma'avir and Ela Mitzvos. So now, not everybody really agreed with that. Right? That was a complicated opinion, and other Achronim disagreed then. But nonetheless, this Gemara sounds like it's a good proof for the Radvaz, because you see that it's better to do a mitzvah now, you know, at the first possible opportunity, and not wait for maybe doing a bigger, more special mitzvah later on. Okay, so now in terms of Osek B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah, at this stage in the Gemara now, we seemingly have two separate sources. Number one is from the pasuk of B'shivtcha B'kumecha, right, from B'shivtcha B'isecha, so that's by Kriya Shema, and that includes even if it was already Matas Mane of that second mitzvah, but it's not talking about a case where there was Kares, right? We're not talking about a case of Kares. And then secondly, we have another source, and that's from Pesach Sheni. And that seemingly is talking about even if it's going to be an Isser of Kares that you'd be missing out on. But it's not where it was Matzah Zmane, right? It's not talking about yet where Pesach Sheni, where Pesach Chiyuv had already come about, right? It was only going to be a few days later. So now, what was the Gemara's conclusion then? So there's seemingly two separate ways to understand that. So on one hand, you could look at it as saying that there's two separate dinim, right? Two totally distinct dinim learned out from these two separate psukim. The first one being Osek B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah, even if it's Matas Mane, but not if it's Kares. And that's learned from Kriya Shema. And even if it's Matas Mane, but as long as the second mitzvah is not an Isser of Kares, So then we have the idea of osu mitzvah, patur mar mitzvah. And that would be basically saying that there's a principle that involvement in one mitzvah makes you patur from having to do another one, as long as that other mitzvah isn't more important. But were that second mitzvah more important, let's say, then you wouldn't be able to do that. And that might be a long line just to connect it to something like the Rambam in Perush Mishnayos, who said that in Avos, he explained that the idea of Iyata Yodea Schar and Shal Mitzvos means that since they don't have punishments, you can't determine which mitzvah, say, is higher or lower. But here, where there is a punishment, and you know, therefore, that it's bigger because it has Iser Kares, then indeed you would have to interrupt that first mitzvah for that second mitzvah. And then there's a totally separate principle, which is Osif Mitzvah, Patur Mar Mitzvah, even if the second one has Kares, as long as it's not yet Matzah Zmaneh. And the principle for that would be that basically you're chayav to do mitzvahs today without worrying about tomorrow, right? We don't second guess. Maybe I'll have a better opportunity tomorrow. Right now, you have a mitzvah. Go for it. Don't worry about tomorrow. So now, again, we see that there's two separate dinim that don't really overlap. They overlap maybe for some cases, but not for all cases. In that we have osif mitzvah, patur mitzvah, even if it's matzah zmaneh, but not if it's kares. And we have osif mitzvah, patur mitzvah, even if the second one has kares, but not if it's matzah zmaneh yet. So overall then, according to this perspective, if there was something which is kares and is matzah zmaneh as that second mitzvah, then you would indeed stop doing the mitzvah you're involved in for that second mitzvah. Since it's matzah zmaneh and it's such a big mitzvah, it's a mitzvah which has kares with it. So that would be one way to read our Gemara's conclusion, that these two sources are both really entirely separate. However, you could also read the Gemara as saying one unified din. And that would be that there's osik b'mitzvah, patur mar mitzvah, regardless. Whether or not it has kares, whether or not it's matzah zmaneh, and either of these psukim helped clarify that that's not a relevant factor, that it has kares, or that it's matzah zmaneh. And then to this perspective, then, if there was something that would come about now, which is matzah zmaneh, and it has iser kares as that second mitzvah, so there's still no need to stop doing the mitzvah you're involved in, according to that. And you'd be totally potter. So in terms of Rishonim, now we have these two different perspectives. Let's say A, the first one is that they're two separate dinim, and B, that no, there's one unified din, and that covers all possible overlap. So the Ra'ah pretty clearly says like B, that there's one unified din. However, Toso seemingly indicates that he's like A, that there's two separate dinim, and there's a potential area where there's Kares and there's Matzah Zmaneh that you wouldn't be potter, Osik B'mitzvah, Potter B'mitzvah. Because he asks a question on Rava in Zvachim, who says that if it's after Chatzos on the 14th of Nisan, and thus it's Matzah Zmaneh of the Karban Pesach, and we're dealing with Karban Pesach where there's an Iser Kares, so i.e. it's Matzah Zmaneh and there's Kares, Rava still holds that the idea of Osif Mitzvah, Patur Mar Mitzvah applies, and that you're Patur from bringing it there, as long as it hasn't yet been Shechted. So then clearly then, Tosos is assuming that there are two separate dinim. That's why Tosos asked this question, Rava, how come you say that the idea of Osif Mitzvah, Patur Mar Mitzvah applies? It shouldn't apply because this is seemingly Kares and Matzah Zmaneh. So Tosos is seemingly showing us that in a place where the overlap isn't covered, right, the two of them don't overlap, that they're two separate dinim, therefore, and somebody will not have the Patur of Osif Mitzvah, Patur Mar Mitzvah if it doesn't fall under one of these two dinim. Okay, so we see the Ra'ah holding there is a unified din. We see Tosos holding that there's two separate dinim. Just in terms of his own Tosos' own question, Tosos leaves it in Tzarech Inan. But how might one answer it? So Tosos is actually based on an assumption in that Gemara in Zvachim. Tosos is assuming the reason why he'd be Pater for the Karban Pesach was because of the fact that he became Tameh. Like, it was in about the Osif Mitzvah, Pater Mitzvah. But Rashi explained the Gemara there as saying that it's because he's an Oni, not from the Tumah, but he's Pater because he's an Oni. And that's why, out of his Aninus, he's Pater. And thus, it has nothing to do with Tumah, and therefore nothing to do with Osik B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah. And we wouldn't have any question to our Gemara, even if you understood that there's two separate dinim. And in fact, therefore, we might say that the Rambam holds this way. The Rambam in Perush Mishnayos sounds like Tosos. Right, the Rambam sounds like it's only because mitzvahs are equal that we have the idea of osik b'mitzvah, patur mar mitzvah. But if you knew the schar of a mitzvah, like by Karban Pesach, for example, then there wouldn't be such a rule. That indeed would take precedence. And as for our Gemara, he'd say two dinim, like Tosos. But for that Gemara in Zvachim, he might explain that Gemara off of Rashi, not Tosos' assumption, and say that Gemara is saying you're patur by Rava. The reason why you're patur there is not because of anything about osik b'mitzvah, patur mar mitzvah, and then you'd run into trouble if you held that there were two separate dinim, but rather, he explained like Rashi, that Gemara is saying you're Pater from Aninus. not from the Tumah, not from Osik from Mitzvah, Potter from Mitzvah. Okay, so now this Chakira about being Potter from an equal Mitzvah, or even Potter from being from a bigger Mitzvah, seems like it could neatly align with overall the earlier Machlokas we've discussed in the past about Tosfos versus like the Ran and Or Zeruah, if we formulate their opinion as saying that there's no need to prioritize one Mitzvah over another one, like ignoring Schar or anything else. Meaning Tosfos holds Efshar L'Kayim Shneihem, then you have to be Mekayim Shneihem, whereas the Ran and Or Zeruah say, you know, even if it's Efshar L'Kayim Shneihem, you don't have to. And they would say, therefore, and even if the later, the Gemara is saying that even if the second mitzvah is bigger, it doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about it. You're involved in Melachas Shemayim, and therefore you're a Potter. Okay, so now just to speak out that there are a lot of different nafkaminas as to whether we decide that there was two separate dinim or one unified din of Osik mitzvah, Potter, and mitzvah, in the end of the day. So the obvious one, as we've spoken out already, is if there's a Isser Kares, which is Matzazmani, Tosfos would say that you're not Potter. And seemingly the Rambam would be like that as well. But the Ra'ah would say, you're still Potter. It doesn't matter. Kares is irrelevant. Matzazmani is irrelevant. That was what the Gemara was teaching us. And there's one unified din. You're Osik B'mitzvah. You're Potter B'mitzvah. So that would be one Nafkamina. A second Nafkamina might be if it's only a Mitzvah D'Rabbanan. And the second one, the one that you would be getting involved in, is an is a Mitzvah D'Araisa. Let's say, like, you were involved with Hakbalas Pnei Rabba, although that one's a little bit complicated, whether that's truly D'Rabbanan. So if it's about bigger and smaller, meaning like Tosfos' perspective, that there's two separate din, and then here maybe you'd be chayiv, since the Daraisa is a bigger din than the Derabbanan one, even though it came second. But if it's about doing Hashem's business versus your business, then even a mitzvah Derabbanan might count as doing Hashem's business, and therefore maybe you'd be potter, because it's still called doing Hashem's will, even if the second mitzvah is Daraisa, and obviously bigger, therefore. So another nafkamina, third nafkamina, would be by, let's say, a suffix mitzvah. Shagaz Aryeh talks about this. He says that you're not Potter if it's a Suffolk whether you're fulfilling mitzvah or not. And that would seemingly align with Tosfos, that there's two separate dinim. Because a Suffolk mitzvah is not clear whether you're going to end up accomplishing the mitzvah or not. And therefore, you should take the Vadai mitzvah, the second mitzvah that you're about to be able to do, and you should be fine. However, the Imre Bina says that you are still Potter. And that could seemingly align with the Ra. Because ultimately, you're still serving Hashem. Even if it's only a suffix, whether you'll actually accomplish anything, but still, what you chose to do was serving Hashem, and therefore, you'd be potter from that second mitzvah, regardless if it might have more strength to it, in that it's avada. So now, the Gemara says, moving on, the Gemara says that an avel doesn't wear tefillin because of a svara. And that svara is because tefillin are called pe'er. But why should you need a svara if the Gemara on Chavheim obeys itself learns it from a pasuk, right? What's the need for a svara if we have it from a pasuk? So, there's a bunch of different answers in the Rishonim. The Rashi ben Ksubos actually says that the Gemara is just telling you with this Sefar, don't learn too much about this from this Sefar. This Sefar is just time to grow. The Gemara is just giving you the philosophical meaning as to why it's true that an Avel is Potter from Tefillin on the first day. It's just time to grow. But the real source is from the Pasuk. So the Ritva acts, the Ritva likes, like, that doesn't make sense. He asks on this and he says, since when does the Gemara just give us philosophical reasons for a Pasuk? Like, just out of the blue. So the Ritva rejects that. So another answer might be as to why we need a svar once we already have a pasuk. So Tosfos here says that the svar teaches us not to extrapolate to all mitzvos that he would be putter there too, right? That you might think that he's putter from other mitzvos as well, based off of the fact that he's putter from tefillin on the first day. And then this svar helps show us why we don't extrapolate, why tefillin is unique. And that is because tefillin is called pe'er, other mitzvos are not called pe'er. Now, a third way to address this, to explain why it is that we have a svar, and once we already have the pasuk, so that's based off of Tosfos and Brachos. His first answer is like Tosfos here, but his second answer could cover for this too. Tosfos there was also bothered by a question as to why tefillin is only for one day when that Avos Potter, when the rest of the Nehugei Avelos, right, the rest of the things that Avos has to do are for all 7 days. Like, why is this one only one day versus 7 days? So to answer that question, as well as this one, as to why the Gemara gave a Svara, that is, after it already had a Pasuk. So Tosfos explains that from the Pasuk, we learn that it's Aser, right? And then we would have thought that was for all 7 days, though, meaning like any of the other Nehugei Avelos. But then we add the Svara to understand the Pasuk as saying only one day that is of Meriras. So, meaning using the two ideas, the Pasuk would have taught me that it's Nehugei Avelos, and I would have thought for 7 days. But then the idea that it's called Be'er, and when it's particularly Mar on the first day, is when he's going to be Potter, but not on the other days. So, why exactly Sfar will teach us only one day and not seven? Like, why is there a clash between Mariros and Tefillin, but not between the Avelos and the Tefillin, that we'll have to get to soon? Rashi basically says that Avelos is not a contradiction to Pe'er, since there's no proverbial offer on his pride, right? That he's not an Afer. It's not like he's got, like, you know, he's down in the dumps. But my Mariros, there is. So that's why that's a contradiction to Pe'er. But we'll get onto this more soon, hopefully, and in the next year. And just to end off, so there's a fourth perspective on how to explain why the Gemara gave us a Sfara after having a Pasuk. And that's based off of a Rosh and Moed Kata. She says that we don't really learn from the Pasuk, right? Really, the Sfara is actually the real source. And the Pasuk was just teaching us that Tefillin is called Pe'er. And then, once I know that Tefillin is called Pe'er, I understand that it isn't proper to put Tefillin, which are Pe'er, in the place of Afer, you know, where you have, like, the, you're so wallowing in your sadness that it's not appropriate then to put something which is there to beautify you, which is the Pe'er of the Tefillin, on when you're solo. Okay, so now, what precisely is this Sfar that we're talking about, right? What would be so bad if there's a stira between the Tefillin and the Mirrors? Like, what is the nature of this problem? So, simple Chakira. What's the reason for the Isra of Tefillin for an Avel on the first day? Is it because you're ruining the Avelus? It's an issue with the Avelus? Or is it because you're ruining the Tefillin? Meaning, there's a problem on the side of the Tefillin. Not in terms of your overall trying to do the Avelus, but rather the Tefillin themselves are what's the problem. So Rashi here says it's because you're ruining the Avelus. It looks like you're showing that you're not an Avel. If you wear Tefillin, then, like, shows like you're not giving the proper cover to that mace. It sounds like you don't care. But Rashi in Brachos and Rashi in Ksubos actually says differently. He says that it's a ruining of your kiyum of mitzvah tefillin. Tefillin requires pe'er. And since an aval can't have pe'er, so then you can't do tefillin. So now, even within that, though, we can still break that up into different ways of phrasing it. Right? Why should that be a reason why? I understand why that's a reason why it's pater. You know, you can't do tefillin, which need pe'er. But why is it usser? Why is it usser for a tefillin, for aval to wear tefillin on the first day? So now we have a few different perspectives. Start off with the least mainstream. So the Levush has an interesting idea that it's from a din of Hesach Hadas, right? The Rambam says that one who's distracted from Tefillin can't wear Tefillin, shouldn't wear Tefillin. So Levush says, since you're so distraught over your sadness of your loss, so that's why it will cause Hesach Hadas, and that's why it's usher for you to wear Tefillin, because it's usher to have Hesach Hadas from your Tefillin when you're wearing it. But more normatively, we have different ways of explaining why it would be usher, not just potter, if it was an issue of ruining the kiyum of the tefillin. So there's the Ritva, who says it's still usher, because to wear tefillin when there's no mitzvah makes you using the tefillin for your own purposes. Right? You're not wearing them for a mitzvah any longer, you're just wearing them because you like wearing them. And that's a violation of their kedusha. You don't have the right to use tefillin for your own mundane purposes. And a different way of explaining why it would be usher, and still within the side that it's a problem with the tefillin, is based on Rashi and the Rush. And that is, it's disrespectful to put them in the dirt, figuratively, right? They're not actually in dirt, but that they're on your forehead, and your forehead is so low right now. They're on your head, it's so low, because you're an Avel, that it's like you're dragging them in the dirt, and that is disrespectful to the Tefillin. It's not, aside from you're ruining your Avelus, as much as you're ruining the Tefillin. Okay, so now, moving on to Shir 5. So now, how did the Rambam understand this issue of Tefillin for an Avel? So, like, now, where does the Rambam stack up? Is he like the side that it's a problem with the Avelos, or is that it's a problem in the Tefillin? So he puts it in Hilchos Avelos, which certainly makes it sound like it's a din in the Avelos itself. So we'll come back to the Rambam soon, but for now, let's go on to understand, again, why is it usher only for one day? Right? Based off of the reason we've said so far, why is it specifically the first day that it's usher to wear Tefillin and not the other seven? So to the Levush, it's pretty simple. There's that super tirda only on one day. You're really, really upset only on that first day, and thus you'll have Hesach Hadas. But on the other days, you're not as tired, you're not as upset, and therefore you're able to put on tefillin. To Rashi and Brachos, and to Rashi and Ksubos, to the Rush, right, that it's an issue about, like, dragging them in the dirt, so then it makes sense also. The reality of being Ma'ul, the Afar Karno, right, you know, that his pride is in the dirt, so that's only true on the first day. That reality is only there on the first day, as the Pasuk teaches us on the Yomar, on that first day. But according to the Rambam, or Rashi here, if it's a din in the Avelus, why would it only be one day? All other dinim of Avelus are all 7 days. So if it's really an issue of a din in the Avelus, it should seemingly be for all 7 days. So two ways to Rebbe suggested to maybe answer this. Number one is that maybe still, nonetheless, they don't want to remove the Ol Shemayim from him this much. Okay, Enoch Hanami, it's like a din in Avelus, but still, We don't want to let the Avel just not have the whole Shemayim of wearing tefillin for all 7 days. So one day serves its purpose. It shows kavod to the mason. That's that. But no more than that one day. Although alternatively, Rebbe suggested that maybe there's room to say that there's actually two dinim in the Avelis itself. And that some halachos apply only to the first day, while other halachos apply to all 7 days of Avelis. And in fact, the Rambam himself indicates like this, because he makes it sound like there's a special status of Avelis on the first day. Meaning he says the Sudas Havara, Sudas Havra on the first day, and he mentions tefillin in that list, and he mentions flipping over the bed on the first day. So now, even though we don't paskin like these, we can still say that the Rambam understood that the pasuk teaches us there's some greater din of Avelis on that first day. And then that makes sense, and that the Rambam holds the first day is Daraisa, while the other 7 days are only Darabanan. So like it would make sense that there's some stronger din of Avelis on that first day, which is unique to it, than the other 7 days. So that might be one way to understand why, if it's din in the Avelis, why it would apply only for one day instead of all 7 days. Okay, so now let's talk about potential nafkmina, whether it's a din in the Avelis or whether it's a din in the tefillin, either way you put it, whether the Lavush, that like there's Hesach Hadas, or like the Rashi, Rush way, that it's like it's Molo above our Karna. So the Prima Gadim offers one nafkmina. It says that according to the Lavush, it might actually be mutter to put on tefillin because it would depend on how you feel. A regular person might not be able to put on tefillin, say. But let's say you really had the ability to be focused. You're really a very special person who can stay focused despite your loss. So then, maybe it would be mutter to put on tefillin if you so chose, even on the first day. But to everybody else, it's not about being subjective, right? Either it's a dinner you're ruining your avelis, or you're ruining your tefillin because you're dragging them through dirt, and like it's not up to you whether or not you feel bad. It's defined as you are somebody who's lowly at this moment, and thus it would be usher for you. So let's talk about some more mainstream nafkmina now, between the side of that it's an issue with the avelis or that it's an issue with the tefillin. So what about on Chol HaMoed, to those that actually put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed in general? So now, there's no avelis on Chol HaMoed, so maybe you would be chayiv. Like if it was a din in the avelis, perhaps you should be chayiv. And in fact, the Magen Avraham and Prima Gadim say this. But the Prima Gadim elsewhere, and the Gesher HaChayim, who actually has a long essay on this, say that he's not chayiv, he's pater. And that would fit with the idea that he's ma'olob afar karno, regardless of Chol HaMoed. It's still disrespectful to put tefillin on him, since he's like just so lowly. He's somebody who just experienced a loss, and that would be coming from the side that is a din in tefillin. So that would be one nafkmina about Chol HaMoed, if you put on Chol HaMoed, if you put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed in general. Now, similar nafkmina, although different, is what about on Purim? So if it's a din in Avelos, so then seemingly you'd be chayiv, because there still is seemingly an aspect of not revealing your avelis, right? We don't do nihugi avelis befarhesia on Purim, so therefore you would seemingly be chayiv to put on tefillin on this day of Purim. And in fact, the El Yerava says this. But if it were a din of the tefillin, then maybe you'd be potter. Since if this was your first day, the Magen Avraham says this, lahalacha. So if this was your first day, so now it's a matter of how you feel. And of course you feel terrible. I don't care if it's Purim. You still feel terrible. And thus, you should be pater. So now the Magen Avraham seemingly contradicted himself. And Rabbi Akiva Eger notes this, right? Based off the Chol HaMoed case, the Magen Avraham says that you'd be chayiv, seemingly from the fact that it's a din in Avelos. And in the Purim case, the Magen Avraham says you're pater, since it's seemingly a din in the tefillin. And Rabbi Akiva Eger, in fact, leaves this as a question. It just seems like there's just a stira. But Ben-Har suggests that maybe one could say that since the Ikar Kiyum of Yontif is belief, and as Rav Soloveitchik says, the Ikar Kiyum of Avelis is also belief, then mamele your sadness will be lowered on Chol HaMoed. You'll be happier, and therefore you're chayiv. But on Purim, where there's no such kiyum of happiness, it's at a din in yuntif, there's no kiyum of happiness internally on Purim, then you're still too lowly to put on tefillin, and that's why the Magen Avraham says you're pater. So really it's a din in the tefillin. It's about you being lowly. But on yuntif, you're less lowly. On Chol HaMoed, you're less lowly, because since the kiyum of yuntif is believed, you're automatically happier, and thus you will be chayiv to put on tefillin. And now proof to this idea that Purim counts as one of the days of Shivas Yimei Avelis, unlike Chol HaMoed, that Purim counts as one of your days of Avelis, even though you don't have Nihugi Avelis before Hesia. So thus, you see, there's no Kiyam Belev on Purim, and that's why it's able to count as a day of Shivas Yimei Avelis. It's just externally, you're not supposed to show it because you don't want to ruin everybody else's Simcha. So therefore, the Magen Avraham, there's no steer. You can resolve the question of Rabbi Akiva and say that the Magen Avraham is really saying it's a din in tefillin, not a din in avelas. Agav lahalacha, the way we pass it is that one who wears tefillin on Chol HaMoed generally, so if their first day comes out on Chol HaMoed, he should put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, and also the same din is that he puts on tefillin on Purim. We say that both. Really, like assuming that it's a din on avelas. That's how we pass it lahalacha, Rabbi said. Okay, let's talk about a fourth nafkamina. What about the day of burial, which is not the day of death? Meaning to say, the person died 2 days ago, and then they bury him 2 days later, so that day, which is technically, formally, the first day of Avelis, does that count as the day that he's Pater and Tefillin, or not? So if it was a din in Avelis, that you're not aware of the Tefillin on the first day of Avelis, so then, this is formally the first day of Avelis, and you should be Pater. And in fact, that's how the Mishnah River Paskins, and that's the mainstream halacha, even though they didn't die that day. But if it's a reality of sadness, you would probably say that the day of death is the Saturday, not the day of burial, and you'd in fact be chayiv on this day of burial. And that's the opinion of the Ma'ari Tatz. Now, what about the opposite? What about on the day of death itself, which is not yet the day of burial, but that day of itself, when he isn't an onein, to be pater. Let's say, for example, a case where it's not meso's not mutum lefanav. So therefore he's not considered an onein and would be chayiv in other mitzvos. So he's very sad on that day. That's the day of death, but it isn't the day of burial. So the Gesher Chaim says that it's usher to put on tefillin that day, since he's still in the dirt, right? It's a din in the tefillin. But on the flip side, the Gesher Chaim also quotes others who held that you'd be chayv to put on tefillin, since it would be a din in the formal avelos. Another nafkmina Rabbi mentioned was Isru Chag, which is technically the first formal day of avelos. Avelos starts after the yontif begins, if somebody had died on yontif. So Knesset HaSagdolos is your pater, since that's your first day of avelos. So your pater and tefillin, and that's seemingly assuming it's a din in avelos. But the Prima Gadim and the Birki Yosef say Chayev, since he's not as bitter then, right? The Prima Gadim is pretty consistent and it's a din in tefillin. So that would be saying, since he's not as bitter then on that day of Isru Chag, he didn't die that day. So therefore, you are going to be Chayev in wearing tefillin. And one final nafkamina Rabbi mentioned was a Shmuel Krova, right? That if somebody finds out that they had a relative passed away, but they had already started this day regularly, for example, they had Davin Ma'ariv already, and thus, it's a regular day where they do mitzvos. Then the following day counts as day one. But in reality, they were really sadder on the previous day, the day that they actually found out, even though formally day one is only the next day. So what do you say? So the Prima Gadim says that you'd be chayav on that first day, since it's a din in tefillin. And he's not as sad. So like, don't tell me, oh, formally it's the first day. It's not considered the first day. So you're chayav in tefillin, and that's that. But the El Yerabba, since it's a din in avelos, says that it's pater, since the next day is technically the first day of avelos. So, on the first day of Avelis, you're pater from tefillin, and thus, you're pater there as well, even though you're not as sad. Okay, so now, it's possible that you could really say that there's really two dinim, and that there's both aspects. There's Isser from the side of the tefillin, not to ruin the tefillin, not to be mevaza the tefillin, and also not to mess up your Avelis, and that both of these ideas might be true. And that this, for example, could explain a steer in Shulchan Aruch, where he seemingly says one way in Aruch Chaim, another way in Yoredeya, about whether or not one could put on tefillin before Netzach Hama on that second day. Because the Gemara says that the second day is also Asur, but it also says Mixas Yom Kekulo would then seemingly make it Mutter. So once the day began, at least a little bit, so you'd be Mutter. But what about before Netz, where that day hasn't yet begun? So is it still Asur because of the second day? Or do we say, no, it's only one day, and that one day is already over? So you could say that really there's two dinim in tefillin. In the idea of not wearing tefillin on the first day of Avelis. And that regarding the din in tefillin, it might just be one day, because there's no idea of mixas hayom kekulo by a metzias of lowliness. But regarding the din of Avelis, in terms of the formal din of Avelis, in terms of the Avelis itself and not the tefillin, so then it's 2 days, and that would be shayach to have the rule of mixas yom kekula. And that might also be a way to explain why Rashi gave different reasons at different locations. Although it's kind of a strange answer, and in terms of the steer in Shulchan Aruch, it might just be easier to say he's lav dafka and not to be too medayik in him. But it does, this idea of saying two dinim does solve one thing very nicely, and that is the Rambam. The Rambam says something very odd. The Rambam says that there were some chachamim who wouldn't wear tefillin shel rosh on Tisha B'Av. Now that's very odd for three reasons. Number one, why would it only be tefillin shel rosh? With like a din and a velos or whatever, something like that, or related to tefillin, why would it only be the tefillin shel Rosh and not tefillin shel Yad? And moreover, why is this only done by some chachamim and not all? Like, it seems like it's like a chumrah that only some would do it, not everybody would do it. Why not? If it made sense, then it should make sense, and everyone should do it, and if not, then not. So why is it a chumrah for just some? And finally, a third question is that, how is this a chumrah at all? You're being mafkia mitzvah. That's not a chumrah, it's a kula. You decided that you want to be machmir, and I'm not going to wear tefillin, I'm not going to do a mitzvah. That's not called a chumrah. What does that mean? You can't just be mafkia mitzvah. So the answer might be that this is a mitzias. Some chachamim really feel this lowly on this day. Though not everybody does, but only the, you know, particularly sensitive, particularly great, feel this mitzias of lowliness. And that's why Talmidei Chacham don't do Sheilas Shalom either. The Rambam repeats things like this throughout this whole parak, that they're really that much like Avela. That they, and he says this threat, but Am Aretz doesn't really appreciate the loss. You know, it's telling him about something that he doesn't really know, he doesn't comprehend the loss of what it means to have the Beis Hamikdash gone. And thus, it's only for people who are sensitized and feel this. So now things start to make sense. Why is it only Tefillin Shel Rosh? Since it's coming from a din in Tefillin as Pe'er, and only the Shel Rosh has that unique status of Pe'er. And in terms of ruining the Tefillin, you can't wear Tefillin when you feel so lowly, but only the ones that are uniquely Pe'er, and that is the crown, the Shel Rosh. But, hold on one second. Didn't the Rambam have it as a din in Avelis throughout? Right? So, it means to say that if you're an Avel, then you don't wear Tefillin at all. So why would they still wear Shel Yad on Tisha B'Av? If they're truly feeling so lowly, and like this is their Avelis, then why should they wear Shel Yad? Since, no, that stems from a din in Avelis. The idea of why you don't wear Shel Yad when you're an Avel is because of the fact that an Avel, just formally, does not wear Tefillin. Because, let's say, these are, you know, still nice things, that they're still Pe'er on some degree. However, in terms of that you are too lowly to dare put the tefillin on your head, that only applies to Shel Rosh, and that is for Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av doesn't have a formal din of Avelis, you're not actually an Avel, but those that feel it deeply, then they can't put on the Shel Rosh, because that's a contradiction to their feeling of lowliness. So thus, for Avelis, you're really putter from both of the tefillins. But from Me'ula B'Af or Karno, that idea of ruining the tefillin, that it's too low, that only potters Shel Rosh. And now, there's a lot of different ways that you can understand this and bring proofs to this, supports this idea that, for example, Rabbi Yechiel Miparis says that our Gemara only teaches us Shel Rosh. So you don't have to go that far. But you could also say that the Gemara about the nations of the world seen us and recognize, wow, the Jews are great because of our tefillin Shel Rosh. It's like our crown. And the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, which says that Poshi Yisrael B'Gufan are those that don't wear tefillin Shel Rosh. Rav Soloveitchik made a diak. Why does the Gemara only say Shel Rosh? And also in the Rambam, the mitzvah is on the head. The way that the Rambam puts it is that it's on the head. And that the idea is that the head with tefillin is now transformed into a crowned head. It's wearing a crown. It's a different type of head. Okay, also it fits with the idea of the Torah quoting the Rosh's practice to say, Oter Yisrael B'Sefara, when he's putting on his tefillin Shel Rosh. That is uniquely the Teferis. And also the bracha we make on each of them is different, right? We say Lahaniach by the Shel Yad, but Al Mitzvahs by the Shel Rosh. It's a different mitzvah bracha. It's a different concept as well. And then also, you don't see the Shel Yad, right? There's an idea that you're supposed to cover up the Shel Yad, whereas the Rosh is supposed to be there. Dafka, it's supposed to be seen. It's public. So again, we see that the Shel Rosh transforms the head, that the Pe'er is ma'akev by the Shel Rosh of Tefillin. Shel Yad is still fancy, and that's why an Avel shouldn't put it on, but it's there to serve us as a reminder to us. It's a fancy reminder. It's not there serving the purpose of being a crown for us. And therefore, it doesn't have that same idea of being putter from ruining the tefillin when you're so lowly, whereas the Shel Rosh does. So you can still say these two dinim ideas, and this very neatly explains this strange Rambam by Tisha B'Av. Moving on to Shir 6, we're going a little bit over time, so we'll try to speed up as much as we can. So Gemara Chaf Hayoma says that the Gemara basically has this idea of an Avel having to quash his feelings in order to not be Mitzar, so that way he can fulfill the mitzvah of Sar. So that seems to imply that there's no value to the Avel feeling bad. So we've already dealt with that from Rashi's perspective, right? In that Rashi doesn't really think that he's supposed to feel bad as much as he has to display feeling bad. And we've also dealt with two different ways to deal with Rav Soloveitchik's perspective, that no, there is inherent value to his feeling bad. But the Ritva here on Chavayim Beis might also have a third perspective, which can also work to answer how to show how we value his feelings. And that is that the Ritva says that the reason why he's... that why we... say that he's chayv and sukkah, and he has to squash, you know, quash his feelings, is that will help him be comforted. His pain is important. But there's also a counter mitzvah of being comforted after feeling bad as an avil, meaning there's menachem avil. So that's also important. And this is part of that process. We want him to feel sad, but we also then want him to get over his sadness. So it's important to get over his feelings, even though it's important for him to first feel sad. And that's why we tell him to go into the sukkah. He's chayv in sukkah, because that will help him be comforted. And that's what this Gemara is saying. That's another way to understand how we can still value his feelings and yet tell him to quash those feelings, other than the two we mentioned, or Rebbe mentioned in the past, by Rav Soloveitchik. So now let's turn to the sukkah point now. So the case of Avel seems very different than the classic case of Mitzvah, right? The pain isn't coming from the sukkah itself. So, like, if you leave the sukkah, that won't relieve the pain, right? As it would by something like a bad smell, or by bugs, or from rain or something. If you leave the sukkah, then you'll no longer have the pain. But by an Avel, the pain is internal. So if the whole idea of being of Mitzvah being potter is from Teshuva Kain to Duru, as a lot of Rishonim say, although there's alternatives, and we'll get to that, Rebbe will discuss them in later Shirim. So then, it shouldn't be relevant for the Gemara to tell us, oh, an Avil is going to be Pater, because, you know, after all, he's Mitzdayer, but then some sort of Kamash Malan. He's not Mitzdayer at all. Mitzdayer is only where if you leave your house, because that you would have left your house because of this problem. But here, leaving your house won't change anything. Either way, you're sad because your relative died. So why would this Kula of Mitzdayer apply? What was the Gemara's Havmina? So there's different perspectives here. So the Rosh and the Mordechai say, Inachanami, look, the rule is indeed, as we just supposed, that the Torah of Mitzvah only applies when leaving the sukkah will actually help lessen your pain. But if not, like by an Avel, then yeah, you're not going to be chayv. But the Gemara's Havamina here, then you're going to be chayv, you're not going to be potter, because if leaving won't change anything, so then why leave? You have a chiyuv to stay in the sukkah. But the Havamina here was that since the Tzar would be caused by the sukkah, in that the Avel would prefer to be alone inside, you know, introspecting in the darkness, the coolness. So it annoys him to be in a happy, outdoor, sunny city. So that's what's bothering him. And we thought the Tzar would therefore be caused by the sukkah. He wants to be inside, gloomy. And instead we're forcing him to be outside, which makes him unhappy. The sukkah is being Mitzar him. And the Kamash Malan is that isn't true. Now, the Taz has two issues with that. Like, first of all, it's a funny way to define Mitzvah. You want to be in pain, and you're in pain in that you're not in pain, right? So that's what we mean by Mitzvah. And secondly, like, isn't there a mitzvah to be Menachem Lavel? So, like, we're trying to get him over his pain. So the Prima Gadim actually has a slightly different take. This isn't in the Rush, because the Rush actually expressed, as we just said it, but maybe in the Mordechai, that you could say the opposite. That if you sit inside a little bit in the privacy of your home, you know, then you'll feel a little better. And thus, by not letting you feel better, not having that therapeutic privacy, calmness inside your home, and instead forcing you out into the sukkah, then that is being mitzvah you by not letting you get over your pain. But regardless, this perspective of the Rosh and the Mordechai, and we'll see the Yoreim, basically are saying that the only time you're going to be potter from mitzvah is when the tzar is coming from being in the sukkah. But if you were to leave the sukkah, that would cause the pain to go away. So then you're going to be potter. But if not, if leaving the sukkah won't help, then you're still going to be chayv to sit in the sukkah. So now there's another perspective that maybe Rashi would read this Gemara's Havamina as being the Gemara's Havamina itself thinking that maybe even tzar is, even if it's not from the sukkah. And then the Gemara's Kamash Malan was that no, only tzar from the sukkah makes you potter. Basically like the Rosh and the Mordechai, but reading this into the Gemara's Havamina itself and then the Kamash Malan. But the reason why this isn't a great read is that the last line of the Gemara doesn't fit so well. Like, why would the Gemara say that he's chayv to calm himself down then, still, according to this? So, an opposing approach, based off of this Gemara, is that of the Maharik. And that is that, indeed, our sugya proves that Mitzdayer is putter, even if leaving the sukkah won't relieve your pain. Now, once you're in pain, you're putter from sukkah, even if it didn't come from the sukkah, and like, leaving the sukkah won't help. So now, then the possible nafkamina between the Rush's opinion and the Ma'arek's opinion would be that, like, if a person's so distraught that he really can't overcome his pain, you know, he's in such devastating pain over his loss, so to the Rush, he'd still be chayv to sit in the sukkah, since it's internal, it's not coming from the sukkah itself, and leaving the sukkah won't help. But to the Ma'arek, you'd really be pater, because ultimately, if you are in pain, then you are pater. So now, just to quickly summarize, the Gemara's Havamina conclusion, according to the Rush, the Gemara's Havamina was that leaving the sukkah would help your pain. The Kamash Malan, the conclusion of the Gemara is that he can stop the pain with willpower. So you can get over it, and thus the sukkah is not causing the pain. It's not considered from the sukkah. So according to Rashi, maybe the Gemara's Havamina was that he's putter even though leaving the sukkah won't help. And the Gemara's conclusion is that no, you're not patur, since leaving the sukkah won't help. Meaning you're only patur from its tar if leaving the sukkah will help. And according to the Rif, the Ma'arik, according to the Ma'arik, the Gemara's having was that he's patur even though leaving the sukkah wouldn't help. And the Gemara's conclusion is that no, you can stop the pain with willpower. But in a Hanami, if you were truly going to be unable to stop the pain, even if it's not coming from the sukkah and leaving the sukkah won't help, you're actually patur when you are mitzvah. Okay, so we've seen now that the Rosh Mordechai Yerim says he's patur only when you'll be saved from the pain by leaving the sukkah, whereas the Ma'arik says you're patur even if leaving the sukkah won't help the pain. So now, what might be the svar behind the Ma'arik's opinion? Why is that true? The Rosh, we understand more. But why would the Ma'arik say that you're patur? So the Taz has one suggestion, and that's that the idea of Teishu Kain to Duru makes one patur for pain caused by the sukkah itself. Because even if the pain doesn't stem from the sukkah, if you're not able to have the proper kavana when doing the mitzvah because you're in such pain, based off of the idea of his father-in-law, the Bach, that in order to fulfill the mitzvah, so you have a very high level of kavana, even though generally we hold mitzvahs don't need kavana. We don't pasken mitzvah, tzrichos kavana. But by sukkah and by tzitzis, where there's leman yedu, there's leman tizkeru, right, that you have to be aware. So there, if you have no concentration, then you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. And the Bach even brings a proof to that idea for the fact that the Torah bothers to tell us that the Anani Akavod we said were Anani Akavod, meaning speaking out what the meaning of the mitzvah is, so you have understanding of what the mitzvah is, so that way you can properly fulfill it. So that's the Bach's opinion. The Taz, following suit, basically says, therefore, if you are in pain and you're caught up in that pain, you're unable to focus, you can't fulfill the mitzvah. So that's why you're fundamentally potter. What are you supposed to do? You're not able to fulfill it. So the Gemara's conclusion is that you have to calm yourself down, but the point is true. If you can't concentrate, then you're putter on its own. So, and then if one were in a case where you're so distraught that you can't calm yourself down, then indeed, maybe you'd be putter. So now, maybe the Prima Gaudium has a different approach, though. And that other approach would be not about like not being able to concentrate as much as, I mean, star isn't just a patur, that it's not just a heter, but rather it's a hafkala gamri, right? You're entirely putter. You're not even a chayuv when you're not able to fulfill the mitzvah, even if you want to. And now, so why might that be? So it might be coming from, one way to put it is that it's coming from Teishu Kain to Duru. This isn't considered a Maisa Yeshiva. You know, like based off of like what Rebbe quoted, like Rashi in Parshas Vayeshev, where he says that Chazal said that Yaakov Vayeshev, he wanted to settle in Shalva, he wanted to have comfort, right? So the idea of Yeshiva might be sitting in comfort. And if you're uncomfortable, then it's not defined as a Maisa Yeshiva. Or you could put it a little bit differently if it's coming not from Teishu Kain to Duru as much as it's coming from the Pasuk of Ke'ezrach, and then like it's like the Pasuk in Tehillim about Ke'ezrach Ranan, which shows that you need to be comfortable to fulfill the mitzvah. It's exeris a kasuv that a person who's miserable is not chayiv in sukkah, basically. You're excluded. So this is a little bit different. It's like a t'nai in your vimla. Like you have to be comfortable in order to be chayiv, and if you're not comfortable, then you're not chayiv, instead of just an inability to do the Maisa Yeshiva. But either way, they're pretty similar. According to this general approach, unlike the Taz's, within explaining the Ma'arik, the point is that there's a complete hafka. You're actually just not chayuv at all in the mitzvah. You can't fulfill the mitzvah at all because of your pain. Not because like I won't be able to focus, and not because it's coming from the sukkah or not from the sukkah. It doesn't matter. I'm just not chayuv when I'm in pain. So now, there's actually a parallel discussion that might be based on, actually parallel to this, based off of the Gemara in Erechin on Gimel and Beis. And the Gemara explains why there would have been a Havmina that Kohanim would be Pater from Sukkah. The Gemara tells us that you're Chayav, and the Gemara says, what was the Havmina that I would think that Kohanim would be Pater? So the Gemara says that since they're forced to refrain from being with their wives in order so that they can serve the Beis HaMikdash, so then maybe they're Pater since they can't fulfill the Teishu of Kohanim to do of having their wives with them and being with their wives. So then the Kamash Lan is that, no, they're not. And that they're only Pater at the time of the Avodah. You might have thought they'd be Pater since they can't do Teishu Kain to Duru being with their wives, since they have to serve the Beis HaMikdash. Kamash Lan, they're Pater only at the time of the Avodah. So now, just to point out, the Shita Mekubetes has a totally different Girsa, which doesn't mention anything about wives. There's no Havin about the wives. And just rather that you might have thought that maybe he'd be Pater if he can't be in the Sukkah for the entire day, even though he could be in the Sukkah for part of the day. And Kamash Lan, he'd be Chayiv when he's able to be in the sukkah, and not chayiv when he's not able to be in the sukkah. But that's the Shita Mekubetzes' girsa. But if you don't have that girsa, and instead you say that the Gemara is talking about one's wife in the Havmina, so then the Gemara's Havmina seems to prove like the opinion of the Ma'arik, at least as we had put it, maybe like the Prima Gaudium, but not like the Taz, right? Because the Taz is like, you're not going to be so miserable since you can't be with your wife that you can't even think about the mitzvah of sukkah. But if you think that the idea is that it's from Teshu King to Duru, that if I'm going to be not fulfilling Teshu King to Duru, because I'll be less happy than I would have otherwise been, I'm Mitzdar, but I can't be with my wife. So then, fundamentally, I'm Patri, even though leaving the Sukkah won't change anything, because either way, the Kohanim can't be with their wives, because they have to do the Avodah. Even if they were sleeping indoors, they can't be with their wives, because they have to do the Avodah the next day. So you see from this Gemara's Havni that it seems to be like a Havka. But what was the Gemara's conclusion? That's really what matters. So there's seemingly two ways to read it. So the Magen Avraham understands that, like, work nights, as Rabbi put it, right? Like, the night before needing to go to work, right, or needing to go serve in the Beis HaMikdash, are Patur because of the Isser of Tashmish. Meaning to say, like, this Gemara would be the source for the Ramah saying that one's Patur from Sukkah if one's wife can't be there. And the idea is that because since you can't do Teshuvah and Kintaduru, because the next night you need to go to work, even though it's irrelevant that you can't do Teshuvah and Kintaduru, whether you're indoors or outdoors, it doesn't matter, you can't be with your wife regardless, so then you'd be Patur from sleeping in the Sukkah. Whereas the Gra says that no, based off of his read of Rashi and Tosfos in that Gemara and Erechin, is that the Gemara's conclusion is that only the actual work hours are Patur since you're so busy. But at nights, too bad, even if you can't be with one's wife, you can't be with your wife, so you're still going to be Chayiv. So accordingly, to the Magen Avraham, the Gemara concludes that you are fundamentally Patur from Teshu King to Duru as a Hafka, like the Ma'arek. Meaning to say, like, if you have to live abnormally, regardless of whether being in the Sukkah or outside of it won't help, right? Because again, either way, you can't be with her inside because you have to do that vote the next day. It doesn't matter, it's Hafka, you're actually Patur from the Sukkah. But to the Gra, you don't have that proof from this Gemara, like the Ma'arek. So, to rephrase maybe the question, what's the nature of the Torah of Mitzdar? Is it just like a heter or a kula that you don't have to go to the Sukkah? Or is it truly a hafka of the chiyuv? Right? And like whether you put it like that, however you exactly want to cut it. But is it that there's no chiyuv in the first place on you any longer? Or is it that it's just a kula that you're allowed and not in the Sukkah? So now there's a lot of potential enough that might come out of that then. That, for example, let's say, as we've already said, you won't be saved from the pain from leaving the Sukkah. So according to the fact that it's just a heter, like the Rosh and the Mordechai, then you're chayuv, because you don't have this heter here. It's not a kula here because you won't be saved by leaving. According to the Ma'arek, you'd be pater. Although this nafkin, the need is nafkin, really you could say according to the Rush, it still is a hafka. That really you don't have a chiyuv whatsoever in that case when it truly is stemming from the sukkah. But it still has to be stemming from the sukkah. But, okay, that's maybe not the strongest nafkin. And that would be important, though, to show why it's not strong nafkin, because that could explain how the Magen Avraham can be like this here, like the Ma'arek, yet seemingly pasuk like the Rush. Above. So let's leave that nafkmin alone. Instead, let's move to other nafkminas. So let's take a second one. If one's mitzdayer and they decide to be machmir, to sit in the sukkah anyhow, is he being stupid? Is he a hedgeot? So it would depend. If you say that it's just a kula, it might only be stupid from certain circumstances. Like, let's say by rain. So the Chacham HaShlomo says by rain, it's specifically that you're stupid because Hashem's rejecting your mitzvah and you're still trying to do it. So that's why it's stupid. But by other things, no. Tavala bracha maybe. Yeah, you should be machmir. Get over your pain and fulfill the mitzvah if you want. But you don't have to. But to the Be'er HaLacha, though, it will end up causing you to be makel on other mitzvahs. Like, if you're actually in pain, like, it will make you be makel on your Simchas Yontif or your Kavod Yontif. So it could be a kula still also. And by painful things that would ruin your Simchas Yontif, so then you'd be pater. But things that aren't painful, according to Chacham Shlomo and the Mishnah Berurah, seemingly, that you would have this idea of being machmir. You know, it's not like simply being in pain will be enough to make you be pater and impossible to the mitzvah. It just, as long as it's not ruining your Simchas Yontif, if you can say, okay, you know what, I'll suck it up a little bit and I'll do it and I will still sit in the sukkah. Anyhow, you'd get a mitzvah. And you're not an idiot. But if you go like the Ma'arek, you're being stupid because it's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah any longer. In fact, the Aruch HaShulchan says this. It's anything. If you are mitzdayer on any level, even if it doesn't ruin your Simchas Yontif type of thing, but it just you're mitzdayer. You're being bothered by the bugs or whatever it is. So it's mitzdayer. Automatically, you're putter because you can't even fulfill the mitzvah. So you'd be a fool then if you tried to sit in there when you're mitzdayer. So another potential nafkmina would be that, what about the idea of mitzdayer on the first night? Right, the first night is unique, right? Maybe you think that you have a special reason to stay there. So if you thought it was just a din and like it's a kula that you don't have to, so then maybe on the first night there's no such kula and you actually have to. But if it's that you can't do the kiyum of the mitzvah because you're really not chai, this isn't considered a yeshiva, let's say, right? Like the Ma'arek, so then there would be no need to, even on the first night, because this isn't called a maisi yeshiva in a sukkah. So you'd be pater even on the first night. Okay, another nafkmina would be, let's say a sukkah, which is painful to sleep in, but you could eat in it. So are you putter from eating there? So Mordechai says you're putter, since you're not yotzei through the eating, since it's not a sukkah, which is ru'uya, the yeshiva. Right? That would be going according to the idea that seemingly it's that you're just not chayiv at all. It loses the ability, since it would be painful for you to try to sleep there. But the Chacham Tzvi argues and says that you'd be chayiv to eat there still, since you couldn't theoretically sleep there. Like, are you able to sleep there? Yes, you just would be uncomfortable. And therefore, you are able to eat there and fulfill the mitzvah, since you're not in pain at that moment. And so there's no real hafka of the yeshiva, just because you'd be in pain if you tried to sleep there. Another nafkmina would be if you have no pain sitting in the sukkah, but there's pain trying to get to the sukkah. So Ramal quotes a Trumasa Dash, and it says that if you're in Tsar, like, for example, if your light goes out, and then you have to eat in the dark, that's considered Tsar, and you are potter from sukkah. But what if you have a neighbor's sukkah that you could go to? So the Trumasa Dash says that if there's Tsar, too, you know, just to show up at his house and, like, impose yourself as a guest, so that also is Tsar. And he says that if there's real pain, then you're potter. So now, what do you mean by that line? If there's real pain. So do you mean that the schlep itself is a patur? Like carrying your svarim to a sukkah in a different context, right? Like it's a pain to get there? So the Magen Avraham and Shulchan Aruch Harav indeed say that there's a patur based on that. So like they say that you're patur from carrying svarim to a sukkah because of mitzvah, because it's a schlep. And then one would have to ask on that, like, how can you say that it's a pain, like to have to get to the sukkah, that's going to be a patur already? You didn't bother to build the sukkah in the first place. You didn't have to hammer in the nails and build the walls and then put up the sukkah. It's a whole big deal. So isn't that a pain in the first place? Yeah, so you're going to have to distinguish and say that there's a difference between normal pain, like to build the sukkah, and like abnormal pain, which is like particularly hard for your unique situation. Okay, but the Magen Avraham and Shulchan Aruch Harav aren't necessarily correct in reading the Trumas Edition. You could also perhaps say that Trumas Edition only meant that if it's uncomfortable to be in your friend's sukkah, then the schlep isn't worth it. And then that might align as follows. That to the Magen Avraham and Shulchan Aruch Harav, it might be that there's a kula, since it's too annoying to do, so like you really don't have to bother doing it. That's the idea. But to the idea that it's only it's a hafka, that you can't do a maisa yeshiva, then it doesn't matter that it's a problem to get to the sukkah. Too bad you have to get to the sukkah, since you could still do the maisa yeshiva once you get there, since you're not in pain once you get there, and then you could do a fulfillment of the mitzvah then at that point. So now, to the Ramah saying that you aren't yotzei when you're mitzvah, so then how could we be yotzei when, in terms of eating, right? The Ramah says that you don't have to sleep in the sukkah when you're mitzvah for sleeping because it's too uncomfortable. So then how could we use that same sukkah, though? Why do we bother always all these years in Poland and the like? Why would we eat in the sukkah still? So the Magen Avraham asked this question, and Rav Ben Arsh suggested two different answers. One's based off of Rav Soloveitchik. The Rav said that when he was younger, it was raining on the first night of sukkah, when he was and he went to sleep. They ate without a brach in the sukkah, and then they went to sleep. So then the rain stopped in the middle of the night, and his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, woke him up in the middle of the night. But the Rav was perturbed. Like, why would his father waking up? Wasn't he putter anyhow at that point, since he was mitzdayer to be woken up? So he should have been putter. So Rav Soloveitchik explained that his father meant this, probably. That there are two dinim in mitzdayer. One is in the yeshiva itself, that if that yeshiva is with pain, and that's a hafka, that they were fully putter when it was raining, and they hadn't yet fulfilled the mitzvah at all. And the second point is if the yeshiva is fine, but getting to the sukkah is pain. And that type of mitzvah is only a patur. And that's why his father came and woke him up on the first night. In other words, the Rav's tying into his father was that when it was raining beforehand, we ate in the sukkah, we were mitzvah. And if a mitzvah is able to fulfill the mitzvah, we fulfill the mitzvah then. And if a mitzvah is not able to fulfill the mitzvah, then why did you wake me up in the middle of the night so I should go do the mitzvah now? I'm mitzvah and I'm not able to do the mitzvah and I'm patur. So the way that the Rav answered that was that there's two dinim. The yeshiva itself in pain, that's hafka. But getting to the yeshiva in pain, so that's only a tour, and that doesn't apply to the first night. So when they were in the sukkah with the rain, that is in the yeshiva itself, and that's hafka, and that's why they weren't fulfilling the mitzvah, and they were fully putter. They couldn't fulfill the mitzvah when it was raining. But then in the middle of the night, when he was asleep, so then it was only just a matter of getting to the sukkah being in pain, and that's only a tour, a kula, but that only applies on the other nights, not on the first night. And now, similarly, the Be'er Halacha would go with this approach also, that there's two dinim. He combines different nafkmanis, we had said, that if you are allowed to say a bracha when you're mitzvah, when there was pain in getting there. So if there's afka in the sitting itself, so then you're not able to make a bracha, but because that's afka. But if when you're to get to the sukkah there's pain, that's just not taking advantage of a kula. You could have used the kula of not having to go on and get there, But now that you got there, so now it's a mitzvah if you spend there. It's worthwhile to do it, and you're allowed to make a bracha. However, another way to answer this question of, again, how the Ramah could hold that you're not able to fulfill the mitzvah of sleeping in a sukkah when you're in pain, and yet we still all use that sukkah, even though it's a sukkah that's not really a yeshiva, for eating. How could that be? So another way to solve the problem is, even within being within the sukkah itself, is that it depends on how significant the pain is. If it's a very significant pain, then it's a true hafka, like rain, which is miserable. You can't fulfill the mitzvah there at all. But if it's less significant, like not sleeping with your wife in the sukkah, so that's your mitzvah, but it's not the biggest deal, you still can be the kind of mitzvah, and that's why we could still all be yotzei the mitzvah of eating, even though we're not sleeping in the sukkah, because we couldn't be with our wives, and we're potters, so we're allowed to be inside. But the sukkah itself is still royal yeshiva. It's not a hafka legamri, because it's not such a significant pain that it makes it no longer a ma'ase yeshiva. So now, overall, just to conclude, what's the svar behind each of these overall opinions? Right, to the Rosh and the Mordechai, it's basically a kula of Hashem being nice to us. Right, the message is that Hashem's nice to us and makes things comfortable for us, like Dirach HaDarchi Noam, you know, that type of svar. To the Taz, it's a need for the Yediyah. So it's the message is about like intellectualism. Right, you have to have Kavana, you have to have Das as you're in the Sukkah, and without that, it's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah. So that's the svar. But what about to the Ma'arik? What's the svar that like if you're in pain, you're not able to fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah at all? So you can say that the whole idea is to remember how Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in such a wonderful fashion, and to teach us the lesson of how good it is to serve Hashem, how He takes care of us, to remember His Hashgacha, and that things were great for us. That not only coupled, everything was awesome. So now, how Hashem taking care of us is better than anything else. So now, that ties very well into the other themes of Simcha in general and Sukkot. But the point is, it would be perverse to have Tzar in the Sukkah. Like, oh, look how great it is to serve Hashem while you're in pain trying to fulfill the mitzvah. It's antithetical to what the Sukkah is trying to teach us. And you wouldn't be able to remember the idea that the more you're with Hashem, the better off you are. And therefore, somebody who's been tzar is fundamentally potter from sitting in a Sukkah.